Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly with a critical independent voice on the politics and practice of health. With the proliferation of wireless technologies, there has also been new products introduced promising to protect people from the additional layers of electromagnetic and radio frequency radiation. It's difficult to escape exposures even if you don't use cell phones and wireless in your home or office. Cell towers, neighbors' wireless routers, and increasingly Wi-Fi in cities, hotels, and even campgrounds surround us. But what of the products claiming to protect? There's ample science about electromagnetic fields and radio frequency radiation, including what materials amplify and block fields. All are within the laws of physics. Join us as we discover what works and what doesn't when trying to avoid exposures to fields that you can't control. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Jeff Fawcett, PhD.
Thank you, Lena. Earlier this month, the British Medical Journal published a study on happiness. The study is from the same stable of researchers who have showed how social relationships affect weight gain, smoking, and exercise. Using data from the ongoing Framingham Heart Study, they show how personal relationships affect happiness and how it spreads through a social network. In a nutshell, four things characterize the spread of happiness. The type of relationship is the most important, but second, the geographic distance between people is also important. The effect of happiness degrades with time, and happiness reaches out beyond the immediate relationship. In fact, happiness extends to 3 degrees of separation. That is, my happiness can affect the friend of a friend's friend, and then the happiness of the friend of a friend's friend can affect me. But what the researchers saw was that as the time increased between surveys of participants, the effect of someone's happiness during one period decreased dramatically after 2.5 years. However, it didn't decrease to zero. An echo of happiness remained. In their earlier study of weight gain, these researchers found that proximity of friends and relatives had no effect. What mattered was the relationship. In this study, both were very important. For example, the happiness of a next-door neighbor was the second most powerful influence on someone's own happiness, while the happiness of a neighbor who was further away but on the same block had virtually no effect at all. More powerful than happy next-door neighbors were happy friends who lived within a mile of each other, twice as powerful. The relationships that had no effect on happiness, in addition to neighbors further away on the same block, were friends and siblings living more than a mile away, spouses living apart, and co-workers. In between were siblings living within a mile of each other and spouses living together. I think this body of research speaks powerfully to how we humans read and take our cues from each other. In this case, we are reassured by the happiness of people we are close to, emotionally and geographically. Biologically, this makes a lot of sense to me. The lesson here seems to be, move into a neighborhood with your friends. Unfortunately, this study is naive in its way. We don't know what effect social class or income had on the susceptibility of study participants for happiness. I recall an 80s rock star saying, money can't buy happiness, but you can park your yacht right up next to it. It turns out that there is a fair amount of research to support the claim that increased income, in fact, doesn't have much of an effect on happiness, at least insofar as that income enables the purchase of more stuff. A recent article in Science reported on a study that found that above the subsistence level, total income had an inconsistently weak effect on happiness. What really affected happiness was spending gifts for other people and donating to charities, what the researchers called pro-social spending. Personal spending, expenses, housing, and products for personal use, had no effect on happiness. None. Not that anyone should be surprised, but this supports the idea that gross national product is a ridiculous measure of our national welfare. The San Francisco Chronicle carried a story earlier this month about the Himalayan nation of Bhutan and its development of gross national happiness as its measure of national welfare. The occasion was a conference on GNH that attracted a wide range of economic officials, including many from Europe. The government of Bhutan is developing an index for GNH. Unlike GNP, which is measured in dollars, Bhutan's GNH index is said to have 72 standards that include equitable distribution of income, sustainable development, environmental protection, conservation of cultures and natural resources, and good government. Next year, France will unveil its version. I'd be irresponsible if I did not mention that several days after the Chronicle carried this news, it carried a story about citizens of Bhutan who are ethnic Nepalese, made refugees by the government of Bhutan in the early 1990s. Many are being brought to the United States as a new wave of grateful immigrant workers. I don't know the whole story here, but it reminds me that nothing's perfect. Congratulations, President-elect Obama. The network researchers open their article by saying that happiness, like health, is a collective phenomenon. So move into a neighborhood with your friends and take some pro-social actions. It adds to gross national happiness as well as your own. A transcript of this editorial is available on the blog at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Dr. Fawcett. Jeffrey Fawcett, Ph.D., is an environmental economist or political economist, writer, and health educator who produces this show with me. Now to today's topic, which is shielding electromagnetic fields. And our guest is Emile de Toffel. He is a native of New York State. Emile de Toffel earned a Bachelor of Science in Engineering Chemistry from SUNY at Stony Brook in 1979, and a doctorate of dental surgery from the same university in 1983. After retiring from the practice of dentistry and volunteering at the Option Institute in Sheffield, Mass., a resource for families with autism, Dr. de Toffel created lessemf.com as a way to apply his engineering and health science background to help the growing population of individuals concerned about the adverse effects of electromagnetic field radiation. Less EMF Inc. now offers over 300 EMF safety products from around the world, including meters, shielding, and books on the topic. And we're actually very excited to have him on the show with us. Dr. Toffel, welcome. Do we have our guest?
Yes, hi, Lena. I'm great to be here.
Oh, there you are. You're just a little quiet, but I'll just turn up your volumes on this end. Thank you so much. Why don't we start by talking about what should be the primary areas of concern for people, where most of our exposures are coming from?
Typical exposures around the home or around the office for electromagnetic fields are going to involve things, of course, that are plugged in or electrified. You've got your wiring in your home. You've got the appliances. You've got computers, cell phones, cordless phones, and, of course, the power lines in the street that supply the energy to the home. So these would be the typical sources, as well as you may have specialized equipment, whether it's fax machines, medical equipment, and so on. Anywhere where you have electricity flowing, you're going to have electromagnetic field emissions. But some sources are either closer to where the people normally are, or they're stronger, and so that their reach is further into the living space of the home.
I think it's also a question of how much any given person can handle before it begins to be irritating. So it really, you know, I think for most people, using appliances in the home, having a home office, having a computer, most of these things don't start to become a problem unless there's an added exposure, which may not be of the exact same type, but for instance, if they've purchased a home right behind a power pole that happens to be a large power pole with a transformer on it, or they begin to add other technologies to their office like wireless, or they're working in an environment surrounded by these things, and then suddenly a person who never noticed any particular sensitivity begins to become overly sensitive. And what sorts of things do you hear from people when this starts to happen? How do you know you've got a problem?
Yeah, that's right. It seems like the feedback that we get is that the electromagnetic exposure tends to be cumulative. Just as you mentioned, you may get some exposure at work, you may get some exposure at home, you may get some exposure when you go shopping, and some from your vehicle as you drive around. And while each person's sensitivity to electromagnetic fields is different, in other words, a discussion of electromagnetic sensitivity is going to be entirely different from a discussion of electromagnetic exposure, because as you point out, exposure of a certain type of electromagnetic field of a certain intensity for a certain duration could be very tolerable for one person, but could create tremendous symptoms or other problems for another person. So generalized advice is useful in determining what kind of exposure a person might have, finding out the sources where it may be coming from, taking steps to reduce it. But a specific discussion about electrical sensitivity will be very important for each individual.
And of course, we've interviewed Ole Johansson about the research connected to the specific kinds of reactions that people have, how they happen and what happens, and the fact that even people who don't experience the symptoms of hyperarousal, insomnia, agitation, dizziness, vertigo, cognitive symptoms, nausea, you know, sort of ringing in the ears, things that they can't quite figure out what is. But a lot of people don't even experience those symptoms, and yet have skin reactions that indicate that their body's still reacting. So I think that what we can say is that the reason we chose to do this program today is partly because I heard from listeners after doing a show recently with Cindy Sage about the latest research on the additional health effects study that are being studied about cell phones, and some of it was rather damning, very damning. And the evidence for DNA breakage, which leads to cancer, and the incidence of brain tumors, both malignant and non-malignant, both in adults and young people, is rising. So what we might be talking about here in response to listeners' requests is what sorts of prudent things people can do, aside from obvious things like if you have a home office, keeping, you know, your surge protectors and plugs, especially the ones with the AC adapters, about 4 feet from your body, not sitting directly behind a computer, keeping the screen as far from you and the computer, the CPU, as far from your body as you can practically, you know, a good 4 feet, because there's an enormous amount of fall off. In addition, I think in bedrooms, it's better not to have a plugged-in device right next to your head in the bedroom, you know, a light or a clock. It's better to be plugged in at the other end of the room and not to use a lot of extension cords all over the place. So, and we'll get into more specifics, but now with the rising, there is now finally people are beginning to be a little concerned about this new blanket of electrosmog coming from cell phones. And I hear often from people after I've done a show about the science here that they have purchased a product to put inside the phone, or they're wearing something around their necks, and they understand this to be protective. The reality here, I believe, is those products don't comply. They don't comply with the laws of physics. That doesn't mean that they're having no effect. I don't know that we know. And I suppose you could make an argument for energy effects or placebo, and I don't. That's fine. But there is actual science to this. So along with prudent avoidance or limiting your exposure, rather than purchasing an expensive item which may not have the right kind of science behind it, I thought we should talk about what science does show us in terms of protection, because some of this may just be prudence.
Right. Yeah. Sure. That makes sense to me, too. And while there's intuitive things that anyone can do immediately in their home, like you mentioned, increase your distance from your microwave oven when it's operating.
Oh, I would say even further, turn it off.
Or,
I mean,
and actually
unplug it, because apparently microwave ovens continue to emit microwaves into the building even when they're unplugged. I mean, even when they're plugged in. So I might suggest not using them at all. But if you do, unplug it when you're done with it.
Sure, I agree with that totally. But just as an example of some things that people can intuitively do, increase your distance from known sources of electromagnetic radiation like TVs and computers and microwave ovens. Turn them off or get rid of them altogether. If necessary, replace them with a lower emission device or even a non-emitting device. I cannot tell you how many times we get calls for people looking for low EMF hair dryers.
Oh, good luck with that.
The low EMF hair dryer has been around for millennia.
You're kidding.
The towel.
Oh, the towel.
The towel. And so, you know, there are, in many cases, there are just very simple alternatives. We just have forgotten to think about them.
Yes,
right,
but your hair looks different when you towel it. Well, anyway, yeah, I know.
Well, there's a price to pay.
Yes, right? There's always you always have to balance. You always have to kind of be aware of what choices you're making.
There's no question that these electric devices bring us comfort and convenience and simplicity and work reduction, but there's the price to pay. And there's also a price to pay going the other way and getting rid of them. So increasing our distance, turning them off, replacing them with a low EMF alternative, or shielding if necessary.
Now, one of the things that's interesting about our electricity is that we use AC rather than we use alternating current rather than direct current. And it's really a shame because direct current electricity, which I think some people have when they have their own electricity coming from solar panels and whatnot. But when power goes from direct to alternating, the alternating current, and in the same sense, the pulsing radio frequency seem to be, those types of currents and frequencies tend to be the most irritating to people. Can you explain that?
I don't know that that's entirely true in the sense that we just simply may not have studied DC fields as much as we've looked at the effects of AC fields, simply because we just don't have that much of it in our world. So, you know, all of the irritating things operating on AC fields, it may just be coincidence that these are all the things that are in our environment.
Oh, that's interesting.
We just don't have that much DC.
Okay.
So it may be that DC is not as irritating, or it just simply may be that we haven't looked at it carefully enough. We just haven't been exposed to that much of it, to tell you the truth.
You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the phone with Emil, E-M-I-L, de Toffel, D-E-T-O-F-F-O-L. He is from Less EMF, Inc., which is at lessemf.com, and we're discussing shielding according to what scientifically works with electrical fields and magnetic fields. Do you want to distinguish between electrical fields and magnetic fields?
I do. I would like to distinguish because when we talk about EMF or electromagnetic fields, we, in terms of measuring them and in terms of shielding them, we really need to make at least three distinctions, if not more. But we'll narrow down to three. When we talk about them, we want to separate out electric fields, which will occur wherever you have a voltage present. We want to distinguish out magnetic fields, which will occur wherever you have electric current flowing. And then we want to distinguish out radio waves, or sometimes called microwaves, which are high-frequency electromagnetic fields. I want to stress, because I can't stress it enough, if trying to reduce or eliminate electromagnetic fields from your environment, that while there are some intuitive things that you can do that we discussed a moment ago, the starting point is always, always to get some meters and make some measurements, because we simply don't know just by looking or just by listening or just by feeling where what type of electromagnetic fields might be present and, furthermore, what the sources are. So while you may take care of one issue that's real obvious, the big elephant in the room, there could be wiring in the wall. Mm-hmm. There could be a neighbor with a shared wall that has a TV set or computer just on the other side. There may be a radio frequency emitting a transmitter on your utility meter that's radiating at you 24/7. So all of these things we just don't have eyes and ears on our body to hear and see them necessarily. Mm-hmm. So the starting point is always to get a meter, and there are so many meters available that are inexpensive. For $100 or maybe a couple hundred dollars, you can get a set of meters that can do the work that you need to identify these fields. And we can certainly talk about those more, but I just want to get that under the belt, that once we've identified, okay, our issue in the kitchen is with magnetic fields, as an example, or our issue in the bedroom is a radio frequency issue from the neighborhood Wi-Fi, or what have you, then you can begin to discuss what to do about it and what your options are.
I understand. Now, in terms of electrical fields, I believe it's still possible to call PG&E and have them come out with a Gauss meter, and despite whether or not you agree with the particular technician about how much you can be exposed to without feeling unwell, that also is going to vary a lot. The general level of exposure that you, sort of the upper limit of what you should be exposed to on a regular basis, is, I think, still a tenth of a milligauss, 0.2 milligauss.
That answer will vary according to who you ask as well.
No. I'm saying sensitive people will react at that level. They won't. They may not feel good at that level, but in general, I think initially the early studies, or at least the more conventional studies, say, you know, keep it down around that. So they'll come out and they'll show you that if you're standing in front of the refrigerator with it open, trying to decide what to eat, you're suddenly getting a blast, and they'll show you how much that is, so that you don't put your bed next to your refrigerator, for instance, you know, or just exactly on the other side of the wall. So you can get an initial sense of things like whether the power pole in your neighborhood is too close to your house, and whether you're getting, because there's an enormous drop-off to electrical fields. This is less true in terms of the microwave, because the microwave is blanketing areas now, and people's little antennas, their routers in their houses, have a range of 350 feet. And measuring electromagnetic or microwave is much more difficult to do. And there are, of course, practitioners around who can come out or lend you, or, you know, rent you a meter if you don't want to suddenly have an arsenal of equipment of your own.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It is possible. And you're absolutely right about how the intensity of the field drops off with distance from the source. And you're absolutely right that when you have multiple sources, if you were standing in between two different sources, whether they were electric field, whether they were magnetic field, or whether they were microwave, your exposure would still be high because you've got exposure from both sides. So even though the strength from each source is decreased by the distance that you are from it, because you have multiple sources in your environment, your exposure still could be high. And that's true in a normal home where you have wiring running throughout and lights and everything else,
mm-hmm.
but as well as in your neighborhood, as you mentioned, with everyone with their Wi-Fi connections and their cell phone connections and all that.
Right.
You have so many sources.
Right.
So you may have radiation coming at you from many different directions, and the cumulative sum of it at your location is what counts.
Yes, and also not to make people sort of just terminally afraid and give up on the idea of even trying to understand their exposures. Most of the things that happen in homes, you're not usually eating your meals right in front of your refrigerator. You usually have a drop off of 4 feet or so. So there's just sort of use your head. If people are using air purifiers that have fans, again, put it up and away from your body. You don't put it next to your head. Don't put things next to your head. And especially don't, you know, try to avoid having things in your bedroom where your body is trying to recover at night.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Like putting the air conditioner in the window right above your headboard.
Yeah, maybe not right there. You know, move it. So just use that drop-off concept as a way to understand how to live in an electrical environment without agitating yourself. Incidentally, just again to go back, the sorts of things that you will notice if there's a sudden change is ringing in the ears. Insomnia is very marked. A hyper arousal, people having a lot of anxiety reactions. Children becoming difficult to handle and having lots of tantrums. I've seen that happen when a neighbor flips on a wireless device and leaves it on. So if there's a change in your behavior pattern, all of a sudden you moved, or, you know, you can look at what did you add into your environment. Did you just use it? Because you can buy, when when you sign up for high-speed internet, they may bring you a router that's wireless. Some of them you can use plugged in, or you can go and purchase a plugged-in one, and having a wire is not a problem. If you have a couple computers in the house, having a wire run along the base of the floor is not as difficult for your body to handle as the router that's an antenna, along with the telephone, the wireless phone. The cordless phones apparently are having the same kind of health effects that cell phones are having. So principles, let's cover a few principles for shielding. Because if you make a mistake, you can amplify the fields. Maybe you can explain, early on, there was something called a Faraday cage, and some of these shielding materials are based on that science. Can you explain that?
Sure. A Faraday cage, in principle, is simply an enclosure made out of a conductive material. So if you were to have an enclosure, a box or a bag or a house, if you will, made out of a conductive material, and it was a perfect enclosure, meaning no holes and no gaps and no doors and no seams on it, then everywhere on the surface of this conductive material would have the same voltage. And because it's the same voltage, everywhere inside that Faraday cage would have an equal potential. In other words, there would be no potential difference anywhere. And that's the simple concept of a Faraday cage.
Although it's a cage, not a solid piece.
It's not a cage in terms of a zoo-type cage. It's simply an enclosure.
I just want to clarify this because other people may be confused. I always assumed Faraday cage was indeed a cage-like thing that had space in between. That wasn't, in other words, it wasn't a solid piece of copper, say. It was copper wires.
It certainly can be, but it doesn't have to be.
Oh.
It can be a solid material,
okay,
as long as it's conductive. Now, the size of the opening, if you use a mesh, the size of the openings becomes important when you're talking about high-frequency radiation like microwave. The bigger the opening, the easier it is for the microwaves to get through.
Okay.
So if you had openings the size of, say, chicken wire, that would be effective for shielding the electric fields like you'd have from wiring and 60 hertz appliances and so on. But high-frequency microwaves can fit through an opening of that size. And so even though you have a conductive envelope or conductive enclosure, if it has big Swiss cheese holes in it like chicken wire does, then the high frequencies can still get through. So mesh size becomes important when you're talking about shielding for electric fields. And whether or not it's a flat surface or a complete enclosure like a Faraday cage, it's still an important issue.
Okay, and then maybe we should talk about mistakes, common mistakes, because, you know, on the surface of it, you could think, well, metal window screen is very fine mesh.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I will just hang it, you know, put it on all my windows, but there are some other things you have to think about before you do something like that.
Well, there sure are. If you're using a metal mesh on your windows, presumably you're doing it to shield microwaves. And it will be somewhat effective, depending, again, on what kind of metal it is, how conductive it is, how conductive the connection is where the vertical wires meet the horizontal ones, and, of course, on the mesh size. The finer the mesh size, the higher the frequency it will shield. Two other factors come into play here. Number one is whether or not it's grounded, and what I mean by that is electrically connected to the earth. Because a conductive surface will primarily act as a reflector to the microwaves. So microwaves originating from outside the home, hitting the screen, will bounce off of it for the most part. But there are two other things happen. Some will come through, will be transmitted through, and some will be absorbed by the mesh. Now, those that are absorbed by the mesh, that amount can be increased by grounding the mesh, as we mentioned before, making an electrical connection to earth. So you can actually increase the performance of the mesh by grounding it.
Okay, so that would be done by attaching a piece of conductive wire to it, and then can you ground it to a grounded plug in your home, or does it have to be wrapped around a piece of metal that's pushed down into the ground, literally?
Right. In theory, a ground is any large reservoir of electrons. So the Earth is the typical ground that we always talk about. The ground in your electric outlet, if it's wired properly, runs from your electric outlet through your circuit breaker box and out to a metal rod that's in the ground or your metal water pipe that's actually in the ground. So it's simply a copper connection to the earth. But you can put a separate copper pipe, if you will, right into the earth and connect to that.
So you're saying either connect to your grounded plug or connect to the ground, literally the ground outside.
Yes.
Okay. We need to take a very brief musical break. And when we come back, we'll continue this discussion with Emil de Toffel of EMF.com about shielding electromagnetic fields and radio frequency or microwave fields in the home and in offices and things like that. So please stay with us. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, here with Jeff Fawcett, and we are on the phone today with Dr. Emil de Toffel, D-E-T-O-F-F-O-L, of Less EMF, Inc. at lessemf.com, and we are talking about specific kinds of shielding that can be used to help mitigate some exposures that you can't control from electrofrequency and radio frequency or microwave. There's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, CD copies, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. And our information number is 707-874-2772. And now back to our interview with Dr. Toffel. So we've talked about a very simple or straightforward way to decrease some of the exposures that are coming from outside, whether it's a power pole, a neighbor's wireless router, Wi-Fi in your neighborhood or town, some of these things. This is preventing things from coming into the house. Why are the windows a good place to begin?
If we're talking about microwave radiation specifically, the windows are likely to be the portals, the most transparent portals. The walls, depending on what they're made of, will offer some degree of shielding. Masonry walls in particular, stucco, brick, and so on, will give you your best amount of shielding. If you've got aluminum siding on the building, that will offer some degree of shielding. But the windows do not. I mean, the microwaves can pass right through the glass very easily, and so that would be the first line of defense, to put some shielding on the windows. Now, any conductive material could be used. So in an emergency, if there was such a thing, you could actually take your kitchen aluminum foil and line your window with it. And it would provide some degree of reduction of the microwaves that might want to pass through it. But keep in mind that conductive surfaces are shielding from microwaves, and especially if they're grounded. But they will shield because they reflect, and they reflect on both sides. So if you have sources inside the home, your cordless phone or your laptop, your wireless connection on your laptop, the microwaves from those devices will be bouncing off the inside of the shield as well. So you can shoot yourself in the foot by putting up a reflective shield and keeping in, if you will, the microwave radiation that you're generating inside the home. So keep that in mind,
yes.
Which is why I'll stress it again. Always start with a meter and take some measurements so that you know what kind of radiation you've got and where it's coming from. You don't want to set up a situation where you're actually containing or enclosing the radiation in your living space so that you are the only place for the radiation to be absorbed.
It's very disappointing to find out that aluminum foil works, because this is the very thing that those of us who are concerned about these technologies are being accused of wearing, is aluminum foil.
I'm not advocating it. That's
no hats.
I'm just using it
no
as
hats.
An example.
No. In a pinch, yes, in a pinch, you're getting very sick because you've suddenly discovered that you've got a neighbor with this thing and they're not cooperating with you. Worst case scenario, you can experiment with the foil, grounding it. And you ground each separate piece, or do you connect each piece to another piece with a piece of aluminum tape or some other kind of connection and then ground once, or you have to ground each piece?
You can do it either way, as long as each piece is somehow electrically connected to ground. So you can daisy chain one piece to the next, to the next, to the next, and then finally the last one to the ground.
Okay. Now, there are products that are intended for windows. Can you describe
some? Naturally, there's more sophisticated solutions. There are conductive plastics that can be used to line the windows. Some are tinted, some are non-tinted. There are meshes which can be used to make a screen, which are high-performance shielding. They're designed to shield so they have the right size opening and the right amount of conductivity. So they can be used to make a screen inside the window or out, just on the outside, just the way you might have mosquito screening. There are fabrics that can be used to make drapes or line existing drapes that can be put over the window, some of which are mesh style, so they're transparent and allow light and air through, or some which are actually solid weaves, which don't allow light through but and would give an even higher performance. So depending on whether or not the window needs to be opened, the size of the window, the aesthetics, both on the inside and on the outside, there's a number of options available for shielding microwaves coming through windows.
Okay, and then so the fabrics, if you make drapes, again, ground the drapes.
Yes, these shield. Now, we're not talking about just any fabric. We're talking about
the special
high conductivity material fabric. They'll usually be metallized with copper or silver or other metals, and they should be grounded as well. The grounding always improves the shielding performance of a flat shield.
Let's say that you've identified a source in your office. You've discovered that you're particularly sensitive to your computer, unfortunately, and you need to do work on your computer. Is there anything that people can do my experience of sort of experimenting with this was not so much just move your CPU and your screen away from you, and it looks as though the flat screens are a little less radiation, although they all have some, but just not sit with your nose right up against it. Have you found any other things that are helpful for people who are working in home offices who would like to dampen down some of the exposures in the office themselves?
Yes, very much so. I would suggest that as the first step is to do a simple experiment, and that would be if you're feeling sensitive to your computer equipment, to start by finding out which components are causing the most irritation. And it's very simple to do. Turn on your computer, sit where you normally sit, and expose yourself to one component only at a time. And what that means is, for example, if you have your processor there, your monitor, your keyboard, and your mouse. So you turn your computer on, turn off the monitor, unplug the keyboard and the mouse, and sit in a normal place where you sit and read a magazine for a while. This way you're being exposed only by the computer processor, and see if you have the same type of symptom. Then, let's assume that you don't. Assuming that you do, now you've identified, okay, the processor is at least one of the issues. Now add to it the monitor. Turn on the monitor and sit there, leaving the keyboard and the mouse unplugged. Then you can turn off the monitor, plug in just the keyboard. Again, you don't have to really do any typing just yet, but just have it there on, energized, and then repeat it again with the mouse. And then you can do different combinations. And you can see if you can identify, oh, the keyboard is very irritating to me, or the screen is the one that's really doing it for me, or the combination. Once you've identified which component, by all means, start by increasing your distance. There's no reason that we need to be right up close to the computer monitor. You can adjust your font size. You can adjust your screen resolution. You can make the image bigger on the screen so that you can sit back 3 feet, 4 feet maybe, if your desk and space will allow it. There's absolutely no reason why the processor has to be right near where you're sitting. Even if you have to insert CDs or jump drives or what have you, you can stand up and reach over and make those adjustments as needed. There's no reason it has to be right at your seat. What you are stuck with is the keyboard and the mouse, assuming we're talking about a desktop computer.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to have those at least within reach. Now, fortunately, those tend to not be as high emission devices as the screen and the processor itself. But you can put shielding. Easily, you can put shielding under them so that the radiation is not aiming toward your lap and your legs.
Right?
If you put the shielding under them, then...
Because your keyboard usually... Okay, so we're presuming that you're sitting sort of under the keyboard.
Well, your legs and, and lap.
That makes sense. So you put something... And what kind of materials do you use for... Because you don't want it bouncing.
Right. If you want to shield electric fields, you would use a conductive material. So a conductive pad or a conductive fabric, again, which is grounded, very easy to do, and gives a very high degree of shielding for electric field underneath of a keyboard or a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to shield magnetic field, you can use a magnetic shielding foil, special new metal type foils, which will shield magnetic fields, and you can simply make put it flat or put it as a tray shape under the keyboard.
Again, grounded and grounded.
No, actually, for magnetic field, grounding is not an issue.
Okay. But it is with microwave, right?
Yes.
Okay.
For microwave and electric field, grounding is a very important issue.
Okay.
Now,
so,
shielding the area above the keyboard and the mouse, it becomes much trickier because you do have to see them, you do have to touch them. Now, there are some mesh-type fabrics that you can put over the keyboard and over the mouse to eliminate the electric fields coming off of those devices and still be able to see through and still be able to type through.
And
but shielding magnetic fields above is trickier because there you've got to use solid metals, and there's just not a one that will give you allow you to type through it.
Well, again, if you find that you can reduce, sometimes just reducing the amount that you're exposed to will take care of it. I mean, I do hear from people who absolutely cannot use a computer, and I suppose if you really want to be able to, you can start to take on some of the shielding of the computer, but some of the first things, again, is the getting extensions for the cords and stuff. Now, the cords, I believe, can be wrapped with material, too, because sometimes the cords themselves, if they're touching you or if they're near you, can emit. So
yeah, they sure can. Mm-hmm. And most people, under the desk of most people, you'll find a nest of cords traveling all over the place, and they can be enclosed in shielding material to reduce the emissions from the cords.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they may be one of the items that's closest to your body, at least to your feet and legs. And so they can be a contributor as well as the wiring in the wall that supplies the outlet that all this is plugged into.
Yes, right. And it's usually good to have it all sort of on one side so that you can move your body away from it so you know it's not just all over the place.
That's a great idea.
Again, you know, what we're saying here is not for you to be in a constant state of fear. What we're talking about is if when you're working or in your environment, you begin to notice an inappropriate amount of fatigue, a sense of, you know, like exhaustion, or you feel agitated. There are a number of things. Some people feel a band around their head and their eyes feel sort of almost swollen. They feel sort of a band around their forehead. And when you reduce the fields, like for instance, if someone's in an environment like that and you shut the power off at the source to that room and you let them sit there for a minute, they suddenly feel like they're camping in the Sierras. So sometimes you don't know.
You feel relief, you mean?
You feel, everything quiets down. Your mm-hmm. heartbeat slows. You feel.
And that's a very simple test to do if you think it's electromagnetic fields that might be causing your symptoms.
Right.
Just simply shut off the power
to that room.
Assuming the source is within your control and not coming from your neighbor or something.
Yeah, or you don't go down to the building that you're in and shut it. The whole floor.
The whole apartment,
right. Or no, the office. I'm thinking, you know, the whole, that's it. Let's turn this off. No,
but that's a simple test.
Yes.
And to just expand on what you're saying, that your exposure throughout the day can be cumulative for your symptoms. So So, for example, if when you're sleeping, you're sleeping on the other side of a circuit box on the wall, and so your exposure all night long is very high.
Yeah, don't put your bedroom there.
That makes your body much more irritable during the day when you go to use your computer or your phone or any other device. Whereas if you were to change that so that at least in your sleeping environment, you have a peaceful, restful sleeping environment electromagnetically, very low, very quiet electromagnetically, giving your body a chance to rest and recover from the exposure during the day, that alone can at least put you in the direction of being less sensitive during the day.
So I concur. What I've observed is that when sensitive people literally turn the power switch, you know, the breaker off to their bedroom and leave it off so that there is one room in the house that they can go when they want to rest or during the night when they're sleeping, where there's literally no, you know, very close to no fields. I mean, there'd be some ambient fields, but very, very, very little. your body will have a chance to recover in a way which will give you better resistance. Your margins will be better. And I've heard people say that it's extremely magical. You know, I mean, yes, it, you know, you have to kind of get inventive, like get an itty-bitty book light with a LED light that has a battery that hooks onto your book if you want to read in bed, or you may need, you know, to use a candle to see what you're doing. But it does, for some people, it's enough of a relief to have a place where they're resting where the body can recover, because recovery is always the key to irritation or reactivity. So that's very important. Just turn off the breaker to your bedroom, or just turn it off at night before you go to bed.
Which is really the most effective shielding you can have, is to turn off the source, right? If that's ever a possibility, always take that approach first, even if it doesn't mean permanently turning it off, but temporarily turning it off. You mentioned the refrigerator at the beginning of our discussion, and one of the easiest ways to reduce the emissions from a refrigerator is to put the refrigerator on a timer. There are timers that you can program so that the refrigerator can be on not just once a day and off the rest of the day, but can come on at several periods during the day. And for most families, it would be a simple matter to time it so that the refrigerator is on an adequate number of hours so that the food stays cold, but not on at the times that people would likely to be at or near the refrigerator, at meal preparation time or at homework time or whatever it is in your family schedule that puts people in the vicinity of the refrigerator for extended periods.
And don't sleep with the refrigerator in your room.
But
I think the biggest mistake in the room is that people put devices of various sorts, like air purifiers, or they put, I mean, there's just a number of sort of electric devices, and some people have their computers in their bedroom. So that, you know, really just prudent avoidance would be to put that somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It's always better to have a separate area where you can close the door, or it's not there all the time. And certainly you turn it off when you're not using it, and maybe even unplug it.
Right.
So
and
that's just prudence.
Give some thought, too, to some of the less famous, if you will, electromagnetic sources, such as dimmer switches.
Oh, God.
To DC adapters, you know, the wall warts that are everywhere now. These fluorescent lights and the ballasts
that are
with them, the halogen lights, these types of sources are everywhere in our homes now,
yes.
And they are very, very electromagnetically dirty, meaning spewing out a whole spectrum of frequencies, and very powerful. And so even if you clean up your room in a sense where you move your electric alarm clock from the bedstand to across the room, for example.
Or use a battery-operated one.
Or use a battery-operated one. Or you get that extension cord out from under the bed, where it doesn't necessarily have to be. You can run it simply around rather than under the bed.
Let's go over that list again, because you brought up some very important points. I was going to do an ID, but let's get this. The compact fluorescent bulbs, it's really a shame that this is true, because they really do use less energy. But we did some measurements in our home, and boy, did we see a difference when we unplugged the, and not just turn them off, unplug them from the socket. They are really a mess. It's a shame. But they're also full of mercury, so they're not a happy thing, too. The LEDs, I think, are going to be better to use. They're very pricey, but I think we're getting closer. So what were the other things on your list? There were some other things that were really important.
Well, dimmer switches.
Dimmer switches are so, you know, I myself have noticed that I get a band across my forehead in a house when they have a dimmer switch. I can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on there?
Well, the way that the dimmer switch works is by taking the 60 hertz signal and chopping it up into smaller bits, and so that some of the bits are used and some are not. So that when the light is very dim, you're just using a few bits, and when the light is brighter, you're using more of those bits. And that chopping up is what produces the very strong emissions at high frequency, which is just, and you'll, if you use a meter to measure, you'll notice that the signal is strongest at the midpoint, right, halfway between bright and dim. In my estimation, it's such an unnecessary luxury that a simple flip on and off switch, you know, replacing that with simple on and off switches, I know very few circumstances where the lights actually have to be dimmed.
Well, you can have lamps in the house that have smaller bulbs in them, so that if you want accent lighting, you do that. But maybe we should mention something about. Let me just say, this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the phone with Emil de Toffel from Less EMF Inc. at lessemf.com, and we're talking about shielding for electromagnetic and radio frequency and microwave and magnetic fields. The other thing that can be a problem is that because some lamps are metal, and then you've got the cord, which is not a shielded cord, some of these lamps can emit fields because of the metal in the lamps, right? They amplify the fields a little? Or is it the cords?
I suppose it's possible. But
no? Cords more?
The cord within the lamp that's doing the emission. It is simple to rewire, or it can be simple to rewire a lamp with a shielded cord.
Okay.
So if you're not comfortable doing it, you can take it to an electrical repair shop. I don't know if shielded cords are that easily readily available at your local hardware store, but we certainly offer them, and they're very inexpensive. And a simple way to take a high emission cord that you plug into the wall, whether it's from a lamp or some other device, and simply replace it with a shielded one. There are two types of shielded cord I want to point out here. The standard or the basic type of shielded cord has a shield, a metal shielding built into the sheath of the cord, and this will shield electric field emissions from that wire very nicely. There's another type of shielded cord called mucord, which has the metal shielding in the sheath and also has the conductors, the actual wires within the cord, arranged in a specific geometry which will cause cancellation of the magnetic field, so that magnetic field emissions from the cord are reduced as well. I want to point out here, when you have a lamp with a lamp cord plugged into a wall, as long as the electricity is on in the home, there will be a voltage in that wire. Remember, we said at the outset, voltage is what produces an electric field. So whether the lamp is on or not, and I'm not just talking about lamps, if this is an air conditioner, this is a TV, this is a computer, this is anything else plugged into the wall, whether the device is turned on or not, there will be a voltage in the wire and therefore an electric field emission from that wire. Now, a magnetic field will occur when the device is turned on and when the current starts to flow. The more current that flows, the more a magnetic field that will occur. And so you need to keep that in mind when you're thinking about where in my environment do I have cords, things that are plugged in, and where do those wires run. And is my exposure electric field only, or is it electric field and magnetic field? Because that will help you to, A, decide if you're going to replace the cords with shielded cords, and, B, determine which kind of shielded cord you need, the electric field only or the electric and magnetic.
We're running low on time, but I wanted to ask you about other architectural solutions. From people exposed to stuff like that, because increasingly what people are experiencing, you know, they have more control over what's inside the house and less control over what's coming from around them. So we've talked about window dressing. So there's some other things like canopies you want to mention?
Sure. In terms of shielding the inside of your home from microwaves that might be originating outside the home in the neighborhood.
That would be cell towers or wireless, yeah.
Exactly. There are shielding paints that can be applied to the walls and ceilings. They're water-based paints that will contain a copper or silver particle. You paint them onto the walls just the way you would an ordinary paint. Once they're dry, then you can cover over them with an ordinary latex paint of the color that you choose. And they can be very effective for reducing the microwave transmission through the wall area.
They are pricey, Yeah, they're a bit pricey, though.
Well, they cost more than ordinary paint, naturally, but they are way less costly than the shielding fabrics and shielding plastics.
Oh, good point.
Yeah. Then, of course, there's shielding fabrics, which you can use to make drapes, or it can be used as wallpaper on the walls. As well, they can be used to make a smaller enclosure, a tent, if you will, or a canopy over a bed. In fact, there's some ready-made canopy items made from various type of mesh materials that look something like mosquito netting, you know, might look on a tropical bed arrangement. But it's made out of a mesh which will be conductive. And so it not only keeps out the mosquitoes, but will also reduce the microwave radiation coming.
So this might be good for people who need to go to motels and hotels and campgrounds where there's wireless. So
something like that can be very portable that way. In addition, these fabrics can be made, or some of these fabrics anyway, can be made into garments, and some ready-made garments exist, hats, shirts and pants, even undergarments and gloves and socks and so on. So all these types of things are available for people who are either very sensitive or for people who are required to be in the presence of strong radiation sources, either at work or in their travels on their way to and from home, that can be used, that can be portable shielding, if you will, that goes with your body where you go.
Before we completely run out of our valuable time here, I'd like you to say a word about cars, and it isn't intuitive, so tell us what you know about both standard cars and electrical hybrid cars.
Mm-hmm. The modern cars, the gas-powered vehicles, are loaded with electronics in the dashboard and in the passenger compartment, as well as under the hood. In addition to that, when you take steel and you start spinning it, it will produce magnetic fields as well. So the steel belts in your tires, when they're spinning, produce strong fields. So there's, again, a whole plethora of electromagnetic fields coming at the driver in the car, most of which, in most models, is coming from under the dash and up under the floorboards near the pedals. This type of field can be shielded. The question is, can you get the shielding where you need to put it? In other words, between you and the source. And the magnetic shielding foil materials are adapted well to this, and what it usually means is taking up the carpeting in your car and getting up in there with the magnetic shielding foil and getting it where you need.
Putting it under the carpet, that's easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, and then
add to that, the hybrid vehicles now are designed to be electric, at least part of the time, and so now you have, in addition to all the electronics in the car, you've got the addition of the power system contributing, again, very strongly. And if the battery compartment is under the back seat, where it is in many of these vehicles, then the passengers in the back seat are really taking the brunt of it,
mm-hmm.
as well as anyone who's near the power cables running to the motors, which actually turn
mm-hmm.
the wheel.
Very quickly, we've only got about 30 seconds. Is there any kind of shielding? Is it the same thing, the foil materials?
There is. There's magnetic shielding foil materials. It comes as a foil format in various thicknesses and also in a rigid plate format in thicker, larger dimensions.
So people can outfit their cars. That's wonderful. Oh, well, you know, this has been really helpful. Thank you for helping people to clarify what the science shows is possible to do if people want to just reduce their exposures so that they're less at risk, whether they're having obstreperous symptoms or they just want to be prudent. Emil de Toffel from Less EMF, Inc., lessemf.com, if you'd like to look at some more information and products. I really appreciate your time. Thank you for spending it with us.
Great, Lena. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. There's information about your own health and fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, CD copies, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number, 707-874-2772. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.